Hey, hey, Heat Nation. Welcome back to Heat is Gonna Heat, part of the OTG Podcast Network. Thank you for checking in. Super easy to do after last night's game. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team making another trip to the NBA Finals, the Miami Heat. Miami goes into Boston. All the momentum on Boston's side after coming back from 3-0 to tie it at 3-3, including that gut-wrenching Derek White buzzer beater in Game 6. And yet, Miami Heat showed they had the guts, the tenacity, the championship drive, whatever you want to call it, to dig in deep, to bounce back from that demoralizing Game 6 loss at home, to go into Boston's arena Game 7 and come out with a dominant win to advance to the NBA Finals, where they will face the Denver Nuggets. Just an incredible run for both teams, I guess. But as usual, we'll recap Game 7, talk about some fun stuff there, and then we'll look ahead in the middle part, since we'll have a middle segment today, to talk about just what the matchup will be like versus the Denver Nuggets over the course of this final series. And then last segment, we'll look ahead to Game 1 this Thursday, NBA Finals. I can't say that enough times. It amazes me how this run has gone. But first, we go back. Last night, Game 7, Miami won at the Boston Celtics Arena 103-84. Interestingly enough, Miami with that exact same score, 103 from Game 6. The big difference here being 20 less points for the Boston Celtics in Game 7. That's what I said, like, a dominant win it ended up. Didn't feel it in the moment. Like, believe me, I was pacing until about 2 minutes left. I did not trust this at all. But looking back, pretty dominant win for Miami. Let's talk about it. But first part, rotation stuff. Heat went 8 deep. One of the adjustments I called out on yesterday's episode ended up coming true. Haywood Highsmith getting the 8th spot in the rotation with Cody Zeller getting cut out. That made sense for this series. Like, this was a more wing-heavy series given the way that Boston is constructed. So in that regard, I understand it's not a great one for Zeller. It's not a great one for Love. It is, however, a good series for Haywood Highsmith. He had some very great minutes tonight, a few great defensive plays as well. And playing small ball 5 for the Heat while Bam got some rest. So just super small ball lineup at that part. But Heat went 8 deep. They did extend it to 10 with about half a minute left in the game, which was garbage time, which just having garbage time in a Game 7 tells you a lot about how that game went. For the Celtics side of things, though, they also went 8 deep. They would have Malcolm Brogdon back. However, he would not play in the second half. He only played one stint in the first, did not look very good at all, so understandable that they didn't go back to him in the second half, try to go down to just 7. Though it did eventually extend out to 12 for the Celtics, mainly in the fourth quarter once it became apparent that they were just not coming back into this game and their season was over. So, rotations extending out for garbage time in Game 7. It was on Miami's side of things, so obviously I love it. But for the game itself now, I would be not doing my due diligence if, for the recap, I did not mention at the very least that the game might have been over off of the very first play with Jason Tatum twisting his ankle off of a foul. Just like, again, a fluke play. He jumps up and just happens to come down on a player's leg. He twists his ankle as a result. He still played through it. He still scored. He was still out there, but grimacing, hobbling, clearly limited, and just the part where I say that, like, again, I hate injuries. I hate that they potentially define series. It sucked that he got injured at the very beginning of Game 7. The flip side of that, then, is that is just, unfortunately, how the game goes. Jimmy Butler, it twisted his ankle in the New York Knicks series, and it looks like it's starting to crop back up through this series. He twists his ankle. I don't know if it was the same ankle, the injured ankle, but he does twist an ankle in this game tonight, still keeps playing. Gabe Vincent badly twists his ankle. Game 4, misses Game 5, pushes through Game 6, 7. Injuries are there. It's about, can you overcome those injuries? Miami clearly has shown that they can. For the Celtics side of things, though, where I think this injury may have been more important beyond just the obviously limiting Tatum, their best player, is just the way that the Celtics looked mentally out of it afterwards. Like, oh, Tatum's injured on the first play of the game. Okay, I guess it's over. Like, their mentality just looked sapped immediately from the onset. Which takes us back to what is arguably the biggest flaw of this Celtics team, this iteration of the Celtics team, which is just mental fortitude. So, from there, though, the first quarter, a rock fight that did not see any team break double-digit points until about 4 minutes left, so very low scoring. Miami was down at that time, I think it was 8-11, but Miami would take the lead back for the remainder of the game, as we would come to find out, closing the first quarter on a 14-4 run to be up 7 after the first quarter. I think it was like 22-15. So, you know, again, on the one hand, hey, got the lead, feel great. On the other hand, like, it's really close. Both teams can't seem to make shots. Let's see how the rest of this game goes. Second quarter, though, bench stepped up great early in the second to push Miami's lead up to 17. And you start to feel like you could maybe cruise a little bit. But the Celtics, to their credit, chipped Miami's lead down to 8 over the remainder of the quarter. But Miami closed out the corner strong to be up 11 going into the halftime break. Still feeling good for the most part. You've extended the lead through the second quarter, even though it got a little shaky down the stretch. Third quarter, though, Miami comes out strong, gets their lead back up to 18. And then Derek White, who seemed like the only person on Boston's side, kind of like how we saw previously before where I think it was game 3, Grant Williams was the only one that looked like he gave a damn for Boston. In this game, it was Derek White. Makes sense. He probably has all the confidence after that amazing shot he made at the end of game 6. But Derek White, though, scoring an 8-0 run for the Boston Celtics to cut the lead down to 8. The lead hanging around like 8-10 for the remainder of the third quarter. Heat ultimately up 10 going into the fourth. So Celtics had a little bit of a run to get it back to single digits. Miami kept them from doing anything additional on top of that. Fourth quarter itself, the Heat opened up the fourth on a 16-5 run to go up 22 with 7 minutes left, effectively ending this game. The remainder of the game was essentially just choking the Celtics out, making sure that they never got on any sort of sustained run, get a bucket here or there. Jimmy Butler, as we know, he loves to do that kind of stuff. And it came down to a little bit of garbage time, but ultimately a Heat win. The first and most obvious takeaway from this game, the Miami Heat avoiding the wrong kind of history, not blowing the 3-0 lead. They are now the 151st team straight to win a series with a 3-0 lead. Doing so in what is an amazing bounce back. Like, there are, I'd probably say the majority of teams in the NBA would just crumple after that game 6 dagger from Derek White. Miami is one of those handful of teams that will not. They bounce back not only to win the game, but just do so in a dominant fashion and make it very clear, no, Celtics, you screwed up letting us get that 3-0 lead. We are not letting you come back from that. So that one has to be mentioned first. Beyond just the fact that we're going to the finals, to also not have that black mark on Miami's franchise history. I'm just going to be eternally grateful for that now. Next takeaway, Jimmy Butler getting the job done this time. Game high, 28 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, on a more efficient 12 of 28 from the field. 3 of 7 from 3-point range, just letting the threes fly. 1 of 2 from the free throw line because literally nobody got to the free throw line. I think it was Miami, as a team, was like 5 of 6 from the free throw line to the Celtics, like 11 of 13. The refs were not calling a lot of fouls. I was fine with it because they were not doing it on both sides, at the very least. But back to Jimmy Butler, though. 1-2 from the free throw line. Huge buckets in the fourth quarter just to kill any sort of momentum for the Celtics. And defending both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown at a high level. To no surprise, Jimmy Butler walks away as the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Though also very clear, he was not as interested in that versus the potential finals MVP trophy he could be getting in the next few weeks. Well, I say there was no surprise in him winning the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, mainly because, you know, he is the star player of the team. But there was a legitimate debate for next takeaway, Caleb Martin, who just played a phenomenal series and capped it off with a even more phenomenal game. 26 points, 10 rebounds, got a double-double, 3 assists, 1 steal, on 11 of 16 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3-point range, no free throws. He was the X factor this game, the X factor this series, and it is no surprise to me that out of the 11 voters for the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, 6 of them went to Jimmy Butler, the other 5 went to Caleb Martin, for legitimate reason. Just about every team goes in with the mindset of like, hey, I'm going to try to take out the opponent's best players, and if these role-slash-supporting players are the ones that step up and knock us out, then so be it. That's what Caleb Martin was doing. All the defensive pressure was still on Bam, still on Jimmy, so Caleb Martin had the open looks. He took them, he made them, and that's why I say X-factor for this game, X-factor for this series. The Heat do not get to the finals without Martin's phenomenal play, most especially in this high-stakes Game 7. Next takeaway after that, Bam Adebayo finding just enough where in a game that he still struggled again, but 12 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 block on 4 of 10 from the field, 4 of 4 from the free throw line. Still just defended and covered space and guarded anybody that was in his way. He anchored the zone that was a cornerstone of how Miami ended up defending and ultimately beating the Celtics in this series. And on the offensive end, though, it does not stand out too much, you know, 12 points on 4-10 shooting, but the 7 assists and then even more screen assists, just setting hard screens over and over, like putting his body on the line, legitimately. Just bam. Yeah, he definitely has gotten his flack for certain games this series, but he also deserves his credit. And then the last takeaway I have for this, just Miami taking care of those important stat battles, either keeping them close or winning them. Talking like, most importantly, it's the three-point shooting. Miami dominated three-point shooting, going 14 of 28, good for 50% from three, to Boston's 9 of 42, good for 21%. So Miami doing a great job contesting a lot of Boston's looks, and then admittedly Boston missed a fair amount of open looks as well, whether that was the fatigue of coming back or just the pressure of the moment. Whatever it ended up being, though, Miami dominated that battle. I mean, they shot 50% from three-point range. They should win this game when that happens. And it just that part also amazes me because it continues a trend where Miami was one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the regular season. And that has been one of their biggest strengths in this incredible playoff run is all of a sudden the three-pointers are dropping. After three-point shooting, though, Miami won the turnover battle 12 to 15. That's been every single game we've talked about that, winning the turnover battle. Though they did lose points off of turnovers 19 to 21. Just keeping the possessions on their side, still that was the most important part. The rebounding battle, Miami won that 42 to 40. Though they did lose offensive rebounding 7 to 10. And yet, they won the second chance points battle 16 to 13. That was another thing that went well in their favor, especially considering that they lost points off of turnovers despite having more turnovers themselves. But then last one, they really limited Boston's transition game. That was another big key for Boston to get out in transition with their younger, more athletic players and try to get easy points off of that before Miami could set their defense. Miami dominated that one 17-8. That might have been the biggest battle that they won last night, just cutting off Boston's transition game. And yes, part of that does come from Jason Tatum injuring his ankle, but that also comes from Miami just with a sense of urgency running back and just doing everything they can to keep Boston out of that transition game. Miami, they could not do it easy, but they'd still advance to the second NBA Finals in the 4 years of the Jimmy Butler era. Their incredible run has now reached the final stop, the NBA Finals. Finals will start on Thursday, so while we wait, let's talk a little bit about who Miami will be facing in the finals, the Denver Nuggets, and a little bit of their road to get here. So, Nuggets team, first thing that you should know about them, they are led by a two-time MVP, looks like a future Hall of Famer almost certainly, Nikola Jokic, and who is a legit amazing player if you have not gotten to watch him. Alongside Jokic, though, almost equally important, Jamal Murray, their point guard, So the real quick last few years for the Denver Nuggets, a few years ago, they got Aaron Gordon in a trade. They looked like a legitimate title contender for a week or so until Jamal Murray got injured. I think it was April or May 2021. So he misses the 2021 playoffs. Jamal Murray also misses the 2022 playoffs. He comes back this year, and it's like the Nuggets picked right back up where they left off before he got injured, looking like a legit title contender. And not that Miami has not played some great teams and beaten some great teams, beat the Bucks in the first round, just beat the Celtics, but this Nuggets team might be inarguably the best team that the Heat play in these playoffs. For some regular season statistics, the Nuggets finished 5th in offensive rating. That makes sense. They're a more offensive-leaning team with Jokic's passing and Jamal Murray's shooting. 16th in defensive rating. That also makes a little bit of sense to me. The big knock on Jokic has been how high his defensive ceiling can be. And then overall, 6th in net rating. Again, that just tracks given the offensive and defensive ratings fairly high. The Nuggets team finished 1st in the West with a 53-29 record. They will have home court throughout the finals. And one of the things that I felt was a little bit interesting about this team in particular is how they flew under the radar near the end of the regular season when pretty clearly... So back up to give some context real quick. After the All-Star break in February, playoffs start, you know, mid-April, the Nuggets had, I think, like an 8-10 game lead on the first seed through the West. So essentially, they did not have much of a reason to play hard after the post-All-Star break. They started to cruise. And though that gap, that like 8-10 game gap that they had on first did shrink to like, I think like 3 or 4 by the end of it, it didn't matter because it was too insurmountable. The Nuggets knew it. They prioritized rest for the playoffs. But as a consequence of that, people started to doubt them. Oh, Denver, they're looking shaky. They're not playing their best basketball for the playoffs. Nah. They were just holding it in. Once the playoffs started, removed any doubt about their play in the last few weeks and certified that it was just them coasting. In the playoffs, they handled the Wolves in an easy 5. I think it was like an overtime game in Game 4. Was the only one that the Wolves ended up winning, and that even that one was kind of crazy. Game 5, blowout. In the second round against the Phoenix Suns with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, the Nuggets only got to 6 in that one because both Booker and Durant had out-of-body experiences in Game 3 and 4. Those two were doing like crazy, like, oh, top scoring duos in a game in the NBA history with like 75 or 80 something combined. The point there being, though, was it took historic performances from the two of them to win Game 3 and 4 that tied the series at 2-2, and then Denver just took care of business at 5 at home and then walked in and mollywopped them in Game 6 to advance to the conference finals. And then the conference finals itself, they swept the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers, to their credit, came in and fought hard in at least 3 of those 4 games, maybe all 4 of them if I remember correctly. The end result still was the Nuggets advancing to the finals in a sweep. They've had over a week off now. Point there being, though, this Denver team is legit. So let's talk a little bit about just the general offensive and defensive philosophies for the Miami Heat coming into this series. You know, try to keep global level, not too down into the weeds as much. But offensive end for Miami is where the Heat should get enough. Denver, again, like on the one hand, there's the argument to be made that their defense slipped a little bit because of those last few weeks of the regular season where they did not care as much. On the other hand, that is definitely their worst end for the Denver Nuggets on the defensive end. Just a little bit tricky to gauge. So the big key for Miami is figuring out how to get Jokic out into space and make him defend like by moving around. Jokic is not the most athletic person from like a mobility standpoint. He is big. He is strong. So you don't really want to try to like post him out. You got to try to find ways to drag him out to the perimeter and then see if you can blow by him or get him to drop and open up some easy threes for Miami's perimeter players. Denver, to their credit, has built a good enough defensive system around Jokic such that it hasn't killed them like it used to in years past. And also, Jokic, to his credit, has worked on his body and conditioning to the point that he's a neutral to good defender. But he does still have his flaws. And knowing Eric Spoelstra and his Heat team, that's what they're going to try to capitalize on, is the flaws. Outside of Jokic, though, I wonder if they could also maybe pick on Michael Porter Jr. a little bit, just because he maybe is not as experienced. That might be it in terms of like the big pressure points, though. Just some other general statistics to talk about for the offensive end for Miami going up against the Nuggets. The Nuggets have been one of the best teams at both limiting opponent three-point attempts — they were ninth in the regular season at that — and limiting opponents from converting those attempts, finishing third at opponent three-point percentage. They do have a lot of good perimeter defenders. Aaron Gordon, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Bruce Brown. I mean, if Michael Porter Jr. is locked in, he has the athletic tools to definitely be a great perimeter defender as well. So that, granted, the other part of that has been Miami has still managed to find ways to shoot against great three-point defense teams. You look at like the Knicks in the second round and Celtics in the third round. Well, the Bucks, that played more into Miami's system. That's how they got the threes. But point there remains is Denver, great at defending threes, but Miami has been making their threes throughout this playoff run, regardless of who they've been going up against and how good they've been at that. And then the other part I think is of a particular interest is Denver is above average at limiting their players committing fouls and then also limiting opponents' free throw attempts. So that could be a little bit of a struggle for a Heat team that, I mean, granted, we still found ways to win games with the three-point shooting and not rely so much on the free throw attempts, especially in that Celtics series. That's still a key part of Miami's offensive philosophy. Get Jimmy or Bam to the line, let them knock down some free throws so the defense can get a breather and then set up. Overall, though, on the offensive end, I'm actually not too concerned. I think Denver has legitimately developed a great defensive game plan, but I don't think they've gone up against any teams that had the talent, execution, and strategy mix that Miami has. So I don't know how well tested that defensive stratagem that they came up with is. It's going to be tested here, and that could be a bit of the key deciding factor. But I feel like Miami will find a way to get offense regardless. What is more key for Miami is what they do on the defensive end. And that comes down to mainly defending the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic two-man game. That is the core of Denver's offense for good reason. No other team in the NBA has effectively solved it through three rounds of the playoffs so far. But kind of like before, right, with the offensive end. I also don't think that Denver has gone up against a team that has the mix of talent, execution, and strategy. With that strategy part, I look at Spo a lot there, that the Miami Heat have. But when it comes to Miami defending the Murray-Jokic two-man game, I think it comes down to Miami keeping versatile defenders on Murray and Jokic so that they can switch back and forth as needed. Obviously, Bam would be one of those. He's going to be the best one for that. But I'm also looking at Jimmy, at Highsmith, and maybe even Martin if he can just keep up heft-wise with Nikola Jokic post-ups. But stuff like that. Can Miami keep those versatile defenders? Can those versatile defenders switch back and forth and effectively defend, whether it's on Murray or on Jokic? Because those two do play very different ways. Alongside that, and also just in general throughout the course of this series, one of the biggest matchups is how does Bam in particular deal with Jokic? I've mentioned this before on previous podcasts, previewing them in the regular season. Jokic is one of the few players I have seen, and when I say few, I'm talking like handful, and maybe I'm missing a few fingers. Few players that Bam legitimately has trouble guarding. Granted, he has not had a, you know, playoff series against Jokic where he could just lock in and focus on just him and his peculiarities. It's usually just been in the regular season, which is always chaotic. You don't really game plan too much for teams that are in the opposite conference because you don't see him as much. You're not as familiar with them. Like, there are some legitimate reasons for it. But at the same time, like, Bam would need to go out and prove that he can defend Jokic at a, you know, NBA Finals level. And if he can, then that's a huge swing in Miami's favor. beyond just the Murray-Jokic two-man game now, though, is just the ball movement system of the Nuggets in general. Nuggets finished second in assists per game in the regular season. That makes perfect sense to me, given Nikola Jokic is, I don't even think it's arguable anymore, he is the best passing center in NBA history. And where he's particularly good is whenever defenses try to collapse on him, like double-team him, or just collapse in general, if they leave open like a backdoor cut for somebody and you get to hit that cutter on the run, things along those lines. But those are also typically where the defense has like a lapse of focus, and those won't be as present against Miami. If anything, they may actually play a little bit into Miami's favor. One of the bad stats for the Nuggets offense, 20th in turnovers per game. And given Miami's tendency to like to get into the passing lanes, especially Jimmy Butler, that this could be where Miami slows or at least gunks up Denver's offense. If they can limit or pick off steals off of the Jokic, like hitting the cutter part of Denver's offense, that could go a long way to limiting the overall output. Granted, I would imagine the Nuggets would probably then shift and do more like two-man game type stuff with Murray and Jokic, or Jokic and just about anybody else, because, again, the dude is just that good. But we're talking about trying to limit overall offensive efficiency, trying to plug holes and pare down options. And in that regards, I think the real opportunity for Miami's defense is going to be seeing if they could pick off some of those Jokic passes where he thinks he's got somebody, you know, cutting when the defense isn't watching. But really, that person's been left open, and now Jimmy Butler's pouncing on an easy steal and going out in transition for a dunk. That's what Miami's going to need to bring on the defensive end. And then other, just some key areas, Denver does shoot very efficiently from three-point range, fourth in three-point percentage, which makes sense given the number of shooters they have and having somebody like Jokic that can get them an easy look. But they are 25th in three-point attempts, so being a little bit selective with when they shoot threes. But that also makes sense. They could probably also go inside to Jokic for some easy baskets within the three-point line. What I was trying to get to with that, though, is I don't see the Nuggets as a team that's going to try to rain a bunch of threes like what the Celtics just did, right? The Celtics try to get up 40-plus three-point attempts a game and then worry about the percentage afterwards. Denver's the opposite. They're trying to get up, you know, 30 to 35 a game and just try to really nail those shots that they do take. That's about all I got for the defensive end. Real quick before I close this part out, I just want to talk a little bit about how these two teams have a little bit of history or animosity between at least these versions of these teams, which goes back to November 2021. So Miami goes into Denver. It just seems like another regular season game. Sure, Denver's getting a home-friendly whistle. It's not anything new we've seen. But as the game was winding down into the closing minutes, Markieff Morris, who was on the Heat at the time, body-checked Jokic because he felt that, you know, again, like I mentioned, they were getting a home-friendly whistle. Morris didn't like that. He body-checked Jokic. Definitely a flagrant foul by Morris. I have never contested that. However, Jokic lost his temper, elbowed Morris in the back, giving him whiplash to a degree that Morris ended up missing like he came back March, so he missed 4 months because of the elbow injury that Jokic gave him. And since then, and this could just be my interpretation, but I think I've seen some animosity between these two teams, or at the very least them being chippy with each other. And granted, it's only been like 3 or 4 matches since then, but they always seem chippy. It always seems like Bam and Jokic are getting into it. So I wonder if we will get a little bit of that, you know, now brought onto the final stage as well. It would not have been as good of a revenge series as if the Lakers had made the finals. That would have been the ultimate revenge, the revenge playoff run, right? You would have gotten Bucks, who swept you in 2021, the Knicks, just your 90s rival, the Celtics, who beat you in 2022, could have had the Lakers that beat you in the 2020 bubble, but we still get this Nuggets team. There's still a little bit of history there, and now that's going to play out on the biggest stage in the NBA. Moving on now to the last part that I have for today. Looking ahead to Game 1 of the NBA Finals on Thursday. So, first up, as usual, let's just take a look at the injury report and see how these two teams are looking as they're going into game one. First up, as usual, we know Victor Oladipo out for the season. Tragic. Still hoping that he's recovering well. I did see a picture come up on social media from before one of the games. He looked like a granny out there, was the joke. But the one that we're most concerned about that could be impactful for the series is most obviously Tyler Herro. And we got a bit of good news last night after Game 7. The update is that Herro is ramping up basketball activities and is targeting Game 3, which will be when the series swings back to Miami, targeting Game 3 for his return. That would be not tomorrow Wednesday, but the following Wednesday. So that still give him a little bit over a week to prepare. And this all makes sense. You want to make sure there's plenty of time to get healthy. Ideally, you want to bring him back to a home crowd so that way it's a little bit easier to shake off the rust and he doesn't feel that immediate pressure from the finals. And it gives Miami an opportunity to still focus on the rotation that has gotten them here so far and then just have Tyler Herro be icing on the cake. Either icing on the cake in Game 3 because the Heat are doing great, or he's the reinforcement that could potentially turn this series around in Game 3. And for the Nugget side of things, the only person on listed on their scouting report is a two-way player. So in terms of like their actual rotation, they are fully healthy. No concerns there. Now for the game itself. Game 1 at Denver this Thursday, NBA Finals. I've said it I don't know how many times this pod already, so I almost can't believe it. What's at stake? Well, win, and Miami starts the finals off on the same foot that they have all their other series with a 1-0 lead. Which, side note, that's really impressive now that I think about it. The Heat have not had home field advantage this entire playoffs, and yet they have gone in and stolen Game 1 and the home court advantage in every series so far. So, another opportunity to do that Thursday. If Miami loses, they still have an opportunity to split the series with Game 2 on Sunday. And as we've said in all those other series before, the goal when you're the road team is to just split the first two home games. Beyond that is just extra. Like, I mean, we went beyond that in the Celtics series, and, well, that ended up being huge because we wouldn't have gotten to Game 7 otherwise. In terms of more specific things I'm looking for in this game, first up is going to be what Miami does with their starting four. It made perfect sense for Game 6 and 7 that Spoelstra went with Martin instead of Kevin Love as the starting four. Because, again, like I mentioned before, that Celtics series was very wing-heavy. So you put in Caleb Martin as the starting four, and that way you can go more wing-heavy right back at him. Love, at this point in his career, is closer to, like, a big because of his lack of mobility than he is, like, a wing. So, whereas conversely, the reason why you had Love originally at the start of this series, even then, was that the Celtics were going two big lineups with Rob Williams and Al Horford, and you needed to be able to match that with two bigs of Bam Adebayo and Kevin Love yourself. So, but then, you know, Celtics shift, they go more wing-heavy with Derek White. Miami responds, going more wing-heavy with Caleb Martin. Against the Nuggets, though, they have more of a size front court. Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Nikola Jokic, those are big guys. So in that regard, I would not be surprised if the Heat start out with Kevin Love. It also kind of makes sense from the standpoint of Kevin Love has essentially gotten to rest. He did not play 6 at all and did not play 7 at all. So he's gotten to rest over those days. Maybe he can give them a little bit of juice to start off game 1 with, alongside bringing some size and some rebounding to counter the Nuggets' size on the front court. I do also see the arguments for starting Martin. I just get concerned that they're immediately going to try to put Jokic on Martin and then back him down into the post, and then Jokic will just try to obliterate him inside there. And so in that regard, if you don't want to go Love, maybe you go with Highsmith, who's got a little bit more heft, a little bit more length, and still played phenomenally. I mean, he was a small ball 5 for us in Game 7, so he can at least bang a little bit with bigs. So I would, but one of those three is where it's going to be. I would lean towards Love, but if it ends up being disastrous, maybe we get a shift as early as like the second half. I don't know. We'll see. After that, I think the other thing I'm most interested in is what happens with Cody Zeller. again, kind of along the same lines that we've talked before. Zeller did not really fit in the Celtics series because of how wing heavy that went. That's why he went with Highsmith. This series is a bit more like the first and second round against the Bucks and the Knicks, where there's a bit more of a size problem to contend with. So in that regard, Zeller might be a better fit for this series. Conversely, he might also just get cooked and got to move away from him. But I would still expect Cody Zeller to get a few minutes in Game 1, just to at least try it out. Game 1, you have opportunity to experiment around. I understand why, like, after Game 6, you cut Zeller out entirely, because you have no margin of error. But you still have that a little bit in Game 1. See if you can sneak away some Zeller minutes. And who knows, maybe this is the series for him, and he can be a solid contributor like he was earlier in the playoffs. So overall, I guess there's a bit of a question how deep Miami goes in this first game. If I were to guess, I would think 9-10, with definitely Zeller and Love getting opportunities. Then to me, the wild card is whether or not Highsmith does as well. I think he does after what he did in Game 7. But that's me, and Spo we trust. But where I'm going with that, though, is 9-10, so that way you can test out to see if some people can get minutes or be contributors throughout the series, like Zeller or Love. And then also that way you try to keep the minutes down a little bit for, you know, Jimmy, Bam, Caleb Martin, Vincent, etc. Because, again, the Nuggets have had a week off. Miami finished their game. They didn't even come home. They got on a plane, immediately went to Denver. They are in Denver now. And side note, I think that's actually a really smart move by Miami, because Denver has such a huge altitude. You do not want to come back to Miami at below sea level and then go to Denver, that's literally called Mile High City. Like, that gap in particular would have been brutal to try to adjust to. So at the very least, going to Denver after last night's game gives the Heat the opportunity to catch their breath and try to adjust to the altitude difference before Game 1 Thursday. So fatigue, definitely a concern for Miami. But last part about this, and this kind of goes to the mentality I hope that the Heat approach this game, which is to still go in and try to take this. Don't rest on what happened in Game 7. Keep the pressure on. Go in and take Game 1. This is the first time the Denver Nuggets in franchise history has made the NBA Finals. And definitely the first time for the core of the Denver Nuggets. You know, Murray, Jokic, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon. None of them have been to the NBA Finals for. KCP on their rotation has, but he's more of a role player, supporting player. And then on top of it, like I mentioned, they have had over a week off. So where I'm leading with this is Miami could have an opportunity to take this one from a mentality perspective via a combination of bright lights for the Nuggets and then having a little bit of rust from maybe sitting a bit too long. Yeah, that's something I know players have talked about before, where like it's almost harder sometimes when you have too big of a gap in the playoffs, because then you can't come back and immediately get right back up to that high stakes playoff level. At the very least, Miami is at that level. They had to be in order to finish Game 7. They still will be come Game 1. Maybe they can ride that to a Game 1 win. I'm certainly hoping for it, at least. So that game will be on Thursday. I will be back on Friday to recap Game 1, preview Game 2. Same thing we've been doing for the last month and a half or so. That went on way longer than I ever thought it would. But for today, I do thank you for hanging around and enjoying this Game 7 victory with me. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at Kyle_B_Russell. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball. They're doing some off-season content now for the other teams. Miami, still in the finals. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. I'll be back on Friday. So until then, enjoy the moment. Enjoy this week. Have a good one, Heat Nation.